Earlier this month, the governor signed a bill passed overwhelmingly by the legislature this summer, which would scale back some of the legal protections tucked into the state budget for healthcare facilities during the peak of the state's battle with the pandemic. In light of the legislation being signed, we're revisiting our interview with Assemblyman Ron Kim, a Queens Democrat who sponsored the legislation and has been a vocal opponent of the expanded legal coverage included in the state budget. We spoke with the Assemblyman at the end of July. So can you start by walking me through what you felt were the problems with the protections in the state budget, which sort of codified an existing executive order from Governor Cuomo?
The original executive order that was passed on March 23rd was more of an expansion of the Good Samaritan law, you know, protecting the workers, especially the frontline nurses and healthcare professionals, which we all appreciate and agree to. But in the budget, he broadened and expanded that to cover all the entities behind the nursing home businesses, the private investors, the CEOs, the private equity hedge funds that are heavily invested in this field. And furthermore, it went retroactive to not only cover COVID-related, but non-COVID treatments in hospitals. That's just problematic. So if they've had an injury, let's say playing basketball or something, and you went to the hospital back in March, your rights to recourse were retroactively taken away from you to sue the hospital if they did something bad. And that's not right. So we felt very strong that this was way too broad, and it ended up disincentivizing places like nursing homes from investing further to protect the vulnerable members in those places by investing in PPE or other measures. So we wanted a full repeal, but we did not get to an agreement. So we have a prospective bill that repeals part of the provision moving forward.
So it's not exactly immunity across the board that the budget language offered, though. I mean, you could still sue for gross negligence, though, right?
Yes, that's correct. But going from a standard liability negligence to jumping from gross negligence in the legal world, it is a giant step that takes usually years of people and families and all sides of the industry having input before we do anything like that. So this was the broadest and strongest blanket immunity in the country that the governor had done in the dark without any public input. And it became a golden model for the Republicans to even emulate, and they're trying to put same exact language in the stimulus budget as we speak to give the similar immunity to all sorts of corporations throughout the country as a standard moving forward.
After a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with Assemblyman Ron Kim about efforts to scale back legal protections for the healthcare industry that were championed by Governor Andrew Cuomo. When we get back, we'll consider what scaling back these protections might mean for the future and why a retroactive measure wasn't included.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
We're continuing our conversation with Assemblyman Ron Kim, a Queens Democrat, who's been leading the charge for legislation that would scale back legal protections for healthcare providers that were adopted during the peak of the pandemic. That legislation is now waiting for the governor's signature. So, Assemblyman, before the break, you mentioned that the bill is prospective, meaning it applies moving forward and won't apply retroactively. Why is that? Was it just a bridge too far when it came to whipping votes?
I think there were too many people that would be implicated in some of the errors that were made and would be exposed that we couldn't, and the governor would have never signed something that went retroactive. I mean, simply put, I think the consensus is that there were many people in these places who did not know how to handle the situation, who didn't know how to prevent the spread. But now what we're saying is we know exactly how to prevent and we know exactly how to care for and arrange care for COVID patients, and we shouldn't make those mistakes moving forward. So, for example, we should never be in a position where we're sending COVID positive patients into exposed places like nursing homes. That's a mistake that we will never make again. And moving forward, no one will have legal immunity for making those type of mistakes.
You talked about the difference in liability between a healthcare worker and a hospital CEO. In this legislation that's waiting for the governor's signature, are you scaling back the additional protections for those healthcare workers as well, or is it just for the related staff that might be making sort of the big picture decisions?
We're making it more clear that the immunity moving forward will be scaled to COVID-related diagnosis and treatment practices. So frontline workers, doctors who are constantly treating and dealing with COVID every day will continue to have the same level of protection, but everything else in between and every other type of treatments will not receive the same level of immunity.
If, despite our best efforts, a second wave catches the state and by extension the healthcare system by surprise, do you think that the enhanced legal protections should be reinstated, especially if, we can't tell, who's got COVID, who doesn't have COVID, and we can't really differentiate between that for the purpose of, these lawsuits?
I think it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. I think our initial data show that the states that give some version of this type of legal immunity, which is about a dozen states or so, had the highest level of fatalities in nursing homes. 70% of the nation's deaths came from states that get early legal immunity status. So I think what we're seeing is that if you give these mostly for-profit businesses the early get-out-of-jail-free card, they're no longer incentivized to financially invest to make sure that they can prevent the spread. So I think we should have done the opposite and send a strong message. This is how you should protect your members. And if you're not going to, we are going to hold you accountable moving forward. I mean, I think instead of doing that, we led with the carrot to trying to offer some carrots in hopes that they'll do the right thing. But I think the results are the results. I mean, I think another better approach is, trying to motivate them with sticks.
Are you concerned at all about this legislation maybe discouraging healthcare providers, the workers themselves, from serving on the front lines, especially if they're working maybe outside their normal scope of practice and they're nervous about taking on that responsibility if there is that legal liability?
Sure. And that's the confusing part about how this was framed. Mm-hmm. By giving a broad immunity to the businesses, you're actually taking away the rights of volunteers and workers to pursue third-party lawsuits if something bad happens to you at the workplace. So if you were volunteering, you get COVID or you get sick or something bad happens, you lose your right to sue that company. So we are restoring those rights for the workers by appealing as well. I think that sends a stronger message that we're here to also not only protect the residents and patients, but also workers as well.
You've been working on this issue since probably about 5 minutes after the original language was tucked in the state budget. So I'm curious, what has this legislative process been like? What have you had to do behind the scenes to, move this boulder up the mountain?
Well, we try to focus on the facts and the data, and we published altogether 3 reports on this very topic and the impact of giving for-profit sector early immunity during an emergency, and we've done, we got some good press, the Guardian, Jacobin Magazine, a number of national publications published our reports. And I think internally, as the governor is facing mounting pressure, as Republicans are making this issue a top issue at the stimulus package, I think it's in his best interest to not be the model, the gold standard model for Republicans in D.C., especially now because when he's being criticized for nursing homes, he's reducing the criticism as right-wing, you know, tactics, but yet his policies are being emulated by Republicans in D.C. I don't think, you know, when he has political, you know, aspirations to be supportive of Joe Biden and possibly do something in the near future, I don't think he wants to be aligned with the Republican Party at this point. So it's a combination of all those things, I think, that led to us pushing a compromise bill. It's not everything, again, that we wanted, but it's a step in the right direction. And what's more important moving forward that the governor sooner or later has to address are what are we going to do retroactively for the 6,500 families who lost their loved ones and who feel like there's grave injustice that's done to them by the state.
Normally, when the legislature passes a bill, they send it over to the governor at his request, which can be sometimes weeks, if not months, later. That is not the case with this bill, which is already on the governor's desk waiting for his signature. What should I read into that change in course of action?
Well, we felt very, we felt it was very important because if we wait for the governor and the governor doesn't call this bill up till December, you know, because it's a prospective bill, that means that the immunity would stand for an entire year. You know, we have thousands of families who are still stuck in nursing homes that have no legal recourse. Their rights were taken away from them. So we felt that it was important, and the governor understood this when the senators were talking to the second floor, the governor's people, that it's important for him to act swiftly and make a decision on this sooner than later, because the people who are still stuck in these facilities deserve answers and deserve protection.
We've been speaking with Assemblyman Ron Kim. Assemblyman, thank you so much for making the time.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
You've been listening to the Capitol Press Room, which you can take with you on the go wherever you download podcasts. Our engineer in Syracuse is Dave White. My producer in Albany is Tim Williams. I'm David Lombardo. Thanks for listening.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.